Well, let's call a meeting to order. It's 4:05, November 15th, 2018, at the main office conference room.
I'm glad you guys respect that.
We have quorum. We have five members present. Ann Roth, Steve Hollister, Steve Carrera, Victor Zhao, and myself. You guys want to take a look at the minutes of the last meeting and make any proposed changes or motions, whatever you want to do?
We'll move to approve the agenda first.
Oh, we're doing the agenda first? Oh, yeah, we do. So, yeah. Can I recommend that we move old business in front of new business? Because some of the things, like the RRF rules and regs update, will lead into one of the new business items, which is the bill number 350. Can we? Is that okay with you guys? Can we do that?
Okay. I'll make that motion or second it.
Okay. Okay, you're gonna make the motion and you second.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So motion to move old business in front of new business. Motion's made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
I don't vote. Okay. All right. So that's what we'll do. Other than that, the agenda's approved with that change. Okay. Now we go to the point of the minutes.
Share with your name.
Oh, well. Okay, Terry Brooks has joined us, so now we have six members present. Okay, we're on the minutes now. Read and approve or amend.
Chair, just a couple of typos, and that's second page, first full paragraph. It's just RFPs instead of prices proposal.
Okay.
And a third page under NOVA, the last sentence, 60-day time frame was told TOLD. It's it's supposed to be told, T-O-L-L-E-D, or stopped. Mm-hmm. But that's...
Okay. You have those changes?
Okay. Move to approve.
Okay. I'll second.
Okay. Motion made. Motion made by Ann, seconded by Steve Carrera. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So the minutes are approved with the two changes mentioned by Ann Roth. Okay. Let's go for the administrator's report.
Good afternoon, directors, the chairman, co-chair, guest. I'd like to start off by introducing some of the folks that's in the in front of us. If you guys have not met a gentleman in the public health officer uniform, that's our new chief engineer, Brian Bearden. He's here, and he's taking on the task of running the water division. So we hope and plan to have great things coming up for him actually being able to lead them as the chief engineer versus having us doing a rotation of acting chief engineers or myself actually sitting down and focusing just on the water division. So please welcome him, and I have great faith in that he's going to turn our water division around. So,
great, great.
Good.
Awesome.
Yeah. Next to Brian is Carl Gosey. He's our new Guam program manager from the Pacific Island office. And he's been very instrumental in getting us off the high risk category with US EPA. So I owe him, and the agency owes him, a lot for working with us to get us off that list. So thank you, Carl.
Yes.
Welcome.
Next to him is Mr. Harry Allen. He's our Agent Orange specialist that's come up to Guam with his contractors to do the sampling, which they did yesterday and today. And so we hope to get you guys some results. I'll let him talk about the Agent Orange sampling procedure, which him, the Green Parcel Desmoa, and EGAS divisions accompanied him and assisted him. But there's Harry. In front of them, you guys have met him already. That's Travis. He works for Innovate. He's our contractor through US EPA to handle our Walters development. And so, yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. Again, not my call, what that name is, but.
sir, what is that for?
You came up with the name, why don't you tell everybody what it means? Again, that name disrupts my train of thought all the time to hear my name called out often, and I'm like, what? Who's calling me? No. So anyway, Travis could give an update later if you guys have any questions on where we're at. With Mike Mann before, he was very hands-on with that program development with Travis. Now that Mike's moved on, we're assembling a team to assist Travis to make sure that all the division and all the programs are represented and taken care of as far as implementation into the Walters. And so that's pretty much who the guests we have here and the rest of the staff. So Agent Orange, I'm going to let Harry and describe what they did later on. Some of the other things that we've done through Jesse's group is abandoned derelict vessels, which also Harry came in and took some chip paints from the vessels that we may remove in the near future to ensure that there's no hazardous material within the paint. So Harry's doing quite a bit for us, as well as they also, their contractor, also is taking a look at the Dedido transfer station to do this assessment that the court has required us, Guam EPA, to fix, which is a really expensive project, but at least US EPA is going to do the assessment for us on their dollar, and we'll see how expensive that project can be and what we may have to do in the near future to be able to fund it. We can also basically ask Harry to try to do a removal action on it too if it comes up positive, but I didn't tell him that yet, so keep that as a secret. Yes. Okay, so one of the things, and most people, and you're probably going to see this on the news tonight, most people don't want to talk about it as much, but the only thing I'll talk about the Agent Orange before Harry explains is, so we submitted our work plan to the Navy last week, but they've been notified for the last couple of months that we were going to do this sampling event. Lo and behold, up till yesterday morning, they did not give us any response as far as allowing us into their controlled areas, which basically is a couple gates so that we could go in and sample on non-Navy land. And they told us no. And they told us, and I made it quite clear, I said, well, how about today? And they told us no. They said, can you give us 2 weeks? And which is a really crazy request since we have the sampling team on Guam, wait another 2 weeks. So, so of course, we had to amend our work plan to sample in locations that we thought were as appropriate as our first designated locations. And I think I know we did a really good job in identifying some places. So, again, Harry and Jesse can talk about that in more detail. Just want to say that the public hearing for the reconfirmation of Slory and Bob, I thought really well. It was apologize that you guys had to go through the ringer the first time so that we could prepare
well,
better.
The smart people first.
Yes, so that we could prepare better. I apologize for that. But yeah, we will definitely be more engaged in the future as far as making sure that the senators know the importance that you guys are to this agency. And with that, I'm going to just open up the floor for...
isn't there like a VP in building right now?
A VP?
Yeah, or some solid waste stand territorial.
Oh. Yeah, oh. I was going to say that under miscellaneous, but I can do that now. I can do it now. So, if you don't know, Conchita went to the end of the year Suamo meeting, and she was voted in as the vice president of the nationwide organization for solid waste.
Wow.
Yes. And so she's a big wig when she's not here.
Yeah. Vice president.
Yes. Madam Vice President for Suamo. So that's actually, that organization helps Guami pay quite a bit. We pay a membership fee, which we exceed by the reimbursements they do for our travel to go out to attend the training and conferences that they have for numerous programs that we run and oversee in Guam. So it's a great feat that she's the Vice President of it. And so we don't... I'll let her talk about it later when she goes after her presentation of 32 slides.
Well, she'll be the next president then. So she'll be the vice president, and then we'll be the following president. So she will be it's the Association of State and Territorial Solid Waste Officials.
I need to talk to you about that, if you're really going to be the next president.
Going to be the honcho.
Then you're going to stay here then.
Which means she can't retire for
that's
at least 3
mean.
Or 4 more years.
That's what I'm saying.
Because
yeah,
she has to be in that job.
For 3 years.
Okay. So that's pretty much it. Is there anything you want to add, Nick? There's some things I'll fill in when we get to old business and new businesses, but that's the administrator report. Any questions?
We'll cover the Agent Orange stuff.
Correct. I'll let the sampling team, led by Harry, tell you guys exactly how it went, what they did. Unfortunately, I was only there for half the day yesterday with them, so... They did most of the sites when I left, so I guess I was an impediment to their progress. So. Right, Harry? I think Jesse was saying that. I slowed down the process by being there, so.
Sorry. You're always welcome.
Water drinks.
Pretty good with that rake, though.
That's right. You weren't there when you left. I picked up the rake and pick, so yes. So, anything else? Anybody else want to? Anything that you guys want to ask the staff or employees for under the administrative report?
No. Like Harry, you want him to talk in under the new business?
We'll do the new business of miscellaneous just so that he can give you guys an update and let you guys know specifically what was done.
Okay.
after Katrina's 32 slide presentation.
Ah, okay. That would be under old business. Okay. So let's go to old business next then. Got the Navy NOV, notice of intent to appeal the status.
Okay, so speaking with the captain, Captain Turner, and his environmental director, Mr. Ed Moon, we've had the discussion that this NOV is a follow-up with the NOV to NOVA. And since we find or working on the settlement with NOVA, the intent for the Navy NOV was to put them on notice. We were not looking to double find them or whatnot. And so the Navy understands this. So that's the reason they are not seeking a hearing. They just want to make sure that we come up with the proper verbiage that that it's, you know, it's not something that we're doing out of the box. I mean, it's kind of sort of, but it's not like we're giving them a scot-free release from the infractions that happened that were leaving with NOVA and the Navy on notice. So it's a matter of just me and Kristen and maybe the JAG and Airland talking and just figuring out the proper verbiage to just say, okay, we're good, we can move forward. The NOV is settled, you have been notified, and any future issues will definitely come back and hit you with full force. Yes, ma'am.
But you did find them.
Not the Navy. We find the contractor. We find the contractor. Yes.
It's the same one.
Yes. That is in final stages of negotiation, we hope.
So when once that one settled, then that settles the Navy.
Correct. Again, we're not seeking any fines or penalties from the Navy at this point for this NOV specifically.
Yes. And you have met with them and they agreed to talk?
Yes. Yes. That's correct. I guess as long as we didn't chart or find them or submit a penalty. I think the biggest concern with them was if we were going to penalize two entities for the same infraction.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. So next one would be the Sang Brothers settlement.
Glenn here? No. Okay. For the Sang Brothers? Can you give an update on the Sang Brothers?
Sang Brothers at the fire? No.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the settlement was done.
Right, okay.
And we have the check for the environmental education. Right. We're going to present next week to Juan M. Guerrero, and I believe the rest of the money went into the general fund.
Okay, so we're going to do, part of the settlement was a step to educate the elementary school students on clean air, and so they wrote a check that they could purchase approved materials that we reviewed and approved, and so we'd like to invite the board to that presentation to the school. I think we haven't settled the date, but if you guys are interested, we want to make sure that they get it, and I guess we're gonna do a little bit of public relations out there with that. So if you guys want to, we'll let you definitely know when the date and time is of that presentation to the school.
Next item is the Safe Drinking Water NOV for Waterworks.
Okay, so working with the GWA administrator. So that was the one where they considered the entire southern distribution line, we considered the entire southern distribution line contaminated at one point. Upon investigation, it was just a spigot that a mud dapper had decided to make residence in, and that caused a high hit for that sample location. The upgraded and downgraded locations were clean. So based on that, we had discussions that it wasn't consistent. So again, we would need to, on our settlement, we need to remove that portion out. The portion that will remain is the lack of notification. When they have a positive hit, they're supposed to notify Guam EPA within 24 hours. It took them a couple of weeks. And so that's been worked out, but that modification needs to be done.
Okay. The next item is the NOVA Group.
So the NOVA Group, we've exchanged comments in on the settlement agreement. Nova has reached out to me to see if we would be amiable to changing some of the verbiage that we've submitted, and we are currently going to set up a conference call with them to rectify and inform them on our decision on what their request is at this point. And again, because this is a settlement agreement, I'm trying not to disclose too much until we actually come up with a settlement. Yeah.
Okay. Anybody have any questions on the NOVs that are pending that we just discussed, that are involved just discussed?
Well, it seems to drag on, but it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. I have to take some of the fault for that, for especially for the Nova one, because I know they reached out twice when I was off island, so I wasn't checking my emails. But I did reach out to them when I got back, so we're trying to rectify that and apologize.
And we won't have any timeout issues, will we, with the 60-day rule or whatever? That won't impact anything? It's all been waived?
Yes, at this point, yes, they had agreed to that, yes.
Even the other NOVs.
Right.
Okay. Well, I think Conchita's up to the plate now.
About the RF?
Yeah, she's the RF. Yeah.
Well, Sabrina, I think, is going to make an announcement about that. So.
Oh, okay.
Oh, go ahead if you want.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so since our last board meeting in September, we reported that we didn't hear back from BBMR or DOA. The day after our board meeting on September 21st, we received a memo from BBMR recommending that we work with the chief economist from either BSP, GITA, or DOL to assist us in preparing an EIS, because that's what they said that they wanted. But since October, we have been working with BSP, and today they actually sent a memo to the administrator concurring with us what we've been saying the whole time, that we didn't require an EIS because we were not changing any fees or imposing any fees. And so we just received that today, and I think we want to go ahead and start moving forward.
And just a quick reminder, the EIS that Sabrina's referencing to is the economic impact statement, not the environmental impact statement, that can be confused easily, especially in military buildup plans. So it is something that the legislature imposed on all government agencies coming up with new rules and regulations to, I guess the thought is you don't raise taxes without proper representation, so we don't want to also raise any additional fees unless everybody's had a chance to comment. So that is why there's a requirement to do an economic impact statement for any new regulations.
Is that for anything over 500,000, or is that
well, so, yeah, the thing is, our RRF is only administrative. We're only trying to comply with putting rules into place.
Right.
So we're, like I said, we're not imposing any fees. We're not increasing any fees or anything like that. So they were in concurrence with us. So we just received this, like I said, today. And I believe moving forward, we're going to just write to BBMR and say this is a statement that we got from BSP. They asked us to work with the chief economist, and they agreed with us. So I think our next step after that would be to move forward with the public hearing.
Sure.
Finally.
Right. And then that would be followed up with, based on any of the comments, that would be followed up with the board of approval before we submit it downtown.
Yeah, and then, of course, after the public hearing, we go to the board, send it to the AG's office, and the whole process. So that's where we're at with the RRF. But in case I missed it, I just wanted to share with everybody, in case you forgot, today is America Recycles Day.
That's correct.
Yay. So, I don't want to steal the administrator's thunder, but okay. So this year, but I will anyway. So this year we've had an increase of over 6%. Our new recycling rate for 2017 is 39.16. So yeah, it's for 2017. Yeah, because we announced 2018. So yeah, last year it was 32 point something. So it's climbing.
What was the big uptick? What caused the big increase?
I think the big increase was a lot of like green waste.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But on another note, do you want to say, I think it's part of your presentation.
No, about the food waste, because we're doing the food waste assessment. Part of the food waste assessment that Jacobs, our contractor, has done, they did a survey of 16 establishments, and they discovered that 900 tons of waste food is generated.
Yeah, just
which exceeds, you know, the total amount, the total weight of, I think, mixed plastics and mixed paper.
Yeah.
And all of that food goes to the piggers. But can you imagine 900 tons of wasted food?
That number.
And if you've ever been up to that piggery up there,
no.
I mean, the smell that comes out of it.
that's water to be sure.
We ran through it one day. I mean, and the guy would say, I mean, he just goes to PIs, he picks up these big blue things of food. I mean, it's good to see it doesn't get wasted, but wow, man.
But the 39.16% rate does not reflect the 900 tons. If we added the 900 tons, it'll be like 39.46.
And that's just 16 establishments.
That's just the tip of the iceberg here. Mm-hmm. So,
it's a lot
yes.
of wasted food.
We're getting better. We're capturing more data. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's all.
Should we talk? Where were the slides coming? That was going to be from
Conchita? Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to do. You need to like.
Well, the slides are on the RRF.
No. Mine is on the contract.
That's the HD contract.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
do we want to talk a little bit about the items that the RRF contains, or just a brief? You know, what are the different items? Because
okay.
that's going to lead into the discussion
right.
on Bill 350.
Okay. Right off the bat, what's recommended is. Oh my goodness. Definitely one of them is funding the bottle bill. The stimulus, we have to put that on hold because Jacobs is working on the sliding scale. So we cannot make reference to the sliding scale in the regulations. It has to exist. That's my understanding. That was the advice we got. The second thing from disaster debris. Oh, there you go. Thank you. For disaster debris, we were looking at doing 19 green stations at each jurisdiction. And let's see what else.
Stimulus.
Well, the stimulus, but there's more than that.
The mayor's council.
There you go.
The green waste.
We've got the
zero waste
grant program. We can't do anything with that right away until we change our 10 GCA Chapter 51, which Jacobs is helping us address. Let's see.
Subsidizing the tipping fees.
Okay, for low-income households is another. So yeah, we talked about disaster debris management. Those are the green
waste.
And then there's the green waste plan. And that really discusses or talks about establishing a regional composting facility. Let's see. That's it.
But the low income, is that a lifeline rate for solid waste or for?
Yeah, it is. It's a lifeline rate for the residential collection.
Okay. Yeah, so again, basically the RRF, it's a pretty hefty amount that comes in through vehicle registration. And so these are just options that we have to allow the Administrator of Guam EPA to determine what to execute for that year. So there's no amounts tied in. We mess with this quite a bit. We used to put the amounts into the RRF and we looked at it at the discretion of the administrator, the board, and the staff to determine per year what would be going out to. So, like the mayor's office, and I'm just saying, you know, what we used to be able to do for them was like $400,000, like what the legislature did 2 years ago, which is the $2.2 million. So we still kept it in that we have the ability to provide them money so that they can help their constituents in their village. But again, all the money will be determined prior to with their guys' approval as well. So that's where we're at right now.
Did the mayor's 2.2 rollover, the amount they didn't use, or is that back into the RRF?
It's back in. It wasn't
Was it rolled?
whatever they didn't use, from my understanding, that's what the, isn't that what the...
Connie, do you have an answer?
Whatever
it wasn't a continuing
There's a law, the FY19 budget law, that has a clause in there where the unused funds, or the unobligated funds, unused funds from 2018 be rolled over. 2019.
Yeah.
For the mayor's office.
For the mayor's office.
Yes.
So, what was
so the current funds that was given to us for the recycling for 2019, there was no funds taken out for the mayor's, because whatever the mayor's didn't use that we gave in 2018, which is what, 2.1 or something like that, whatever they didn't use will roll over and be a continuing account until they expend all funds.
And it's still with them, so we're not.
It is still
to give,
with
yeah,
them.
They don't have to give money out. It was transferred to their account. They just don't need to give it back.
Okay.
Well, we're still working with BBMR on it, because we need to change the account, because right now the account is set up as an annual appropriation, and as per my conversation with BBMRs, we need to convert it to a C, which is a continuing account, to make it available for them to use after the September 30th deadline of which the account expires. So it's an accounting thing that they just need to move over the funds, but it will not come back to us, of course. We'll go ready to get it.
So the 2019 money is starting to accumulate there? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Conchita's got the contract with
yes.
Jacobs.
But I need now you're connected.
Okay. So Harry, are you connected to the Spark?
Travis.
Travis? Why don't we do that if you guys don't mind? Can we go over the Agent Orange that's
yeah.
computer that's set up right now?
Man, all right,
ready.
Yeah. I know. Well, should we? 32 slides, so come on.
Mine was going to be faster than
again, this is Mr. Harry Allen. He's an on-scene coordinator. He's the team leader for the Los Angeles office for
yeah.
on-scene coordinators for Region 9.
All right. All right. Thanks for having me, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. It's great to be here. Working in Guam for Guam EPA. I've enjoyed my time out here. And I was happy to come out and continue the Agent Orange investigation. So I was invited last year, I guess it was, to review the Navy sampling plan for the on-base sampling that they did. I made some concessions with them to get the project going for Area 1, 2, and 3. But in general, we felt like they had a pretty good approach, looking for the two Agent Orange constituents, 2,4-D and 2,4,5-T are their chemical names. They have longer names, but you're not going to remember those. So 2,4-D, 2,4,5-T are the two constituents of Agent Orange. Originally, Agent Orange was mixed 50-50, 2,4-D, 2,4,5-T, and it was distributed that way. But also those products were used individually. 2,4-D is a pretty common product. It's found in some versions of Roundup. 2,4,5-T is called Fenoprop in its original trade name. It was banned in 1970 on its own, because on its own it had dioxin as a byproduct. So the real health threat of Agent Orange spraying or residuals is the dioxin component from 2,4,5-T. Actually, the interaction of the two also generates some dioxin, but that's the main health driver. Dioxin is the most toxic, carcinogenic of all the regulated substances that we work with. It's also naturally occurring, so it's kind of a strange thing. But to investigate potential use of Agent Orange for any kind of activity, what just happened there? There it goes. We like to look for 2,4-D and 2,4,5-T. So EPA happens to have a method for that. So when I worked with the Navy on the base, they suggested we use that method and look for those two constituents, if that makes sense. So what they did was and we agreed they would take a large number of small samples from Area 1, 2, and 3 and mix them together and take subsamples and have those analyzed for the chemicals. They gave my team a split sample, just in the mail. They mailed it to us. and we had it analyzed. You may have heard a report on this, but one of the areas had both of the ingredients in it, 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T in a sample, in our sample, and not in theirs. And the other areas are both clean in their samples, but our sample happened to have 2,4-D in one of them. So that told me, you know, we all agreed when we wrote this plan, because I spent a lot of time working with them on the plan, that they'd go back and test that area. And I told Walter, you know what, if we find 2,4-5-T, I'll do you one better, I'll sample outside the fence line. So that's what happened. The Navy argued with me quite a lot about our results. There was some discussion of positive bias, like cross-contamination, but our lab chemists did not see any of that in our samples. So there's multiple explanations possible for the difference in the two labs. But I think the best explanation is just the variability in the samples. And I say that because I've got a lot of experience with these chemicals. So you got any questions so far? Does that make sense, the Navy side? Is it okay if I go into this Navy side, just so it's clear? So they spent a lot of time, oh yeah, the lab didn't do something right, blah, blah, blah. I said, guys, it's more likely that some of the soil that was in the one jar was contaminated, and some of the clean soil that was in the same pan was clean. And you saw us today, Mr. Chairman, you saw us, we took quite a lot of soil, we mixed it up in a pan, and we put it into a jar and sent it off, right? So if you do that and you got 50 subsamples from all, it's pretty likely that some of that's going to be contaminated, some others may not be contaminated, whether there was Agent Orange or not. Just the fact that people used herbicides in history on the base and everywhere else makes it pretty likely you're going to see it in soil. Even though the chemists tell you it's all gone, that's just not been my experience. So we went out and sampled the rest of the area. I've been doing quite a bit of Agent Orange-related sampling of late. I had an experience in 2006. I went to Danang and I sampled for Agent Orange there. Had quite a lot of 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T. At the mixing and loading site at the Denain Air Force Base, which is now their international airport. There's a really large cleanup that happened there that I was, you know, tangentially involved in, but really the investigation was key. So I kind of know what to look for. Then recently, I got a complaint unrelated to this about Agent Orange spraying in Arizona, near Tucson. I spent quite a bit of time sampling out there for these same constituents, and I found those constituents out there. So even if they didn't actually use Agent Orange, which I can't really prove, they used the constituents, and they're still there 20, 30, 40 years later. So when the Navy chemist told me, I don't expect to see these, the half-life is blah, 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 and GAO said the same thing, I said, guys, I don't know what to tell you. Here's the results from Vietnam, from Thailand where we worked, from Arizona, and by the way, our result on Guam shows the constituents. So I think the odds are pretty good we'll find this stuff where people used herbicides, even if it's not necessarily Agent Orange. I'll get to that at the end. So we went out and we sampled some sites. We got a letter from Congresswoman Bordaio in September, and I think she responded to a letter from the Agent Orange Veterans of Guam group saying, you know, will you go out and sample and will you take the guys from Agent Orange Veterans of Guam out with you? And we said, well, if they're there, you know, we'll consult with them. We'd like to know where they think the sites are, but we think Guam EPA should be the lead, and they agreed. Walter and his team collected a lot of information from these folks. They already had the earlier affidavits about the base, but this is about off-base. Brian Moyer and John Wells, I think his name was, they had a conference call with us a couple weeks ago. We discussed where to sample. We looked over some files that he sent us, which were pretty useful. And then we just used the knowledge of Jesse and Michelle and the team about where the pipeline is and where it was. And we picked a whole bunch of sites, and those sites happened to correspond really well with Mr. Moyer's complaint. So those are shown there. The little teal line is the pipeline, part of the extent, and the other green line is the... I don't know which pipeline is which, to be honest with you. There's a pipeline here,
pipeline here. And there's actually a pipeline here, which we don't have a map for. And there's various junctions. I asked Walter and the team to find places where there were junctions. That's the most likely place military personnel would go out and spray so they could maintain the junction site. So we picked these sites. It's Potch Junction. We took five samples. Tejan, we took one here and one up a little bit further at this junction. We took this sample at Mong Mong Toto Maite, right? Mm-hmm. And then down here at PT. And then these couple of samples over here by the Sasa Bay were a place where Mr. Moore told us in the interview he sprayed around a family's home. It's right by the Kenyo Road fuel dump. Right outside the Navy Gate. So we thought we'd go there. Sure enough, the pipeline's there, even though it's not on the map, where it's running right under the road, it's real obvious, and it runs under this residence that Mr. Moyer talked quite a bit about on the phone. So we went and sampled there. We got three samples there. So all together, we've got 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then another 5 up there. So about 13 samples of 5 subsamples. There's quite a lot of sites were included in there. I think it's pretty likely we're going to find at least 2,4-D in these samples. I can't promise anything, but I do think it's pretty likely. It's possible we'll see 2,4-5-T. This is a line of evidence to suggest that more work be done to figure out really what happened with the use of Agent Orange. It's not proof. I think you'll see when GAO comes out with their report, we can't really prove anything. You know, about the use of Agent Orange. I think the closest I could come to that is if I had eye concentrations that were similar to what I've seen in Vietnam. Then maybe I could go back and sample those again. If we had perhaps a way to sample even with an even higher degree of technological innovation, maybe to see some of the butyl esters, that might add some evidence. But still, I think this is a really good exercise. We were addressing a complaint. We went everywhere they said it might be a concern. We would go more places if we had them listed. The Navy let us in the gate. We'd go in there. It's not that big a deal for us to sample and get these analyses done. One thing we did do this time, which we didn't do last time with the Navy, was, you know, they're going to go back and resample. They said when they go back, they want to use the more sensitive chemical analysis method. So we said, we'll do you one better. We're going to run all these samples with the more sensitive method, and we'll do a handful with the other method just for comparison. And so all these are going to be run with the higher, the more sensitive method that we have. And they're going to be run for all the herbicides, not just 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T. And they're going to be run for all the other constituents associated with industrial activity and like we call them semi-volatile organics. It's stuff in fuel, basically. So we just to get a sense of, lines of evidence. This is a real kind of CSI environmental investigation. It's not a typical, and it is kind of a needle in a haystack. You know, if you say you took, 13 samples all over Guam, no Agent Orange, I mean, that's ridiculous, right? We feel like we targeted these sites as best we could, and each one sample, again, represents 5 subsamples. So altogether, 13 times 5 is 65. That's the number of samples we really have that represent this place. And, that's kind of the game plan we use. So the plans are here. You can take a look at them if you like. Now, look at this as a screening level. Again, when this GAO report comes out, I think GAO and Navy may say, oh yeah, it's all done, it's fine. I think you should emphasize, depending on the outcome, emphasize further investigation. This was screening, you can remember that. If any of these are contaminated, it really is it's worthwhile doing further investigation, especially this Olivares family. I mean, there it's a residence. Everybody's complaining of multiple cancers, strange types, which is consistent with the oxy poisoning. Not that that's the cause, but they're living in a pretty industrialized area. Even though it's a beautiful garden spot, it's surrounded by industry and fuel and all sorts of stuff. So it's reasonable to continue to investigate that area. This would be a screening.
Where is that area?
Stage. It's on the bottom there by Sasa Bay. You really, you want to say anything about it?
You headed down south on Route 1, right before you know, Sumai Grill. There's a left turn that goes on the back side, right after
the mural.
On the front side, though.
On the front side of the gate, yeah. So it's back in there.
Where Aaron's, the Sumai behind the grill there?
Yeah, pretty much.
A little farther up, and that's the next intersection prior to the Sumai Grill. But it's the back gate to the fuel farm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been to the Sumai Grill, so I knew where that was. What's that?
Where the power plant is?
Farther down. The power plant's the main gate to the Fisk area. This is just the back side of it.
It's kind of interesting. We don't know the deal yet, but if you see this sort of bowed road, it looks like a bow and arrow.
That road is pretty close to where the owner says the pipeline transect ran, right? And so she gave us a hand-drawn map of where that was, but actually we saw the pipeline in the ditch right here, running this way. We can't confirm that it turns here, but it sure looked like it. There's a pipeline marker on the road, and then down here there's some obvious excavation. There's two mounds in her yard, which are kind of strange. Back in here she said some drums were removed, and sure enough there's scrap metal and waste back there. Some of it was corrugated roofing, but it looked like others were debris, wood, cable, other stuff like that in her back 40. So that's the story there.
Should be noted that the GAO report is supposed to be due out tomorrow.
I mean, where you get the high readings, is it where it was deployed or where it was stored?
You know, I don't have any reason to believe that the levels would be high where it was deployed. But my logic is, hey, you're pulling up in a truck, you got a drum of the stuff on the back, you know, you're filling your tank, you may be going on a hike the way Mr. Moyer said. When you do this, you're going to spill it. And for whatever reason, that stuff stays. Mm-hmm. You know, in my experience, wherever it was stored or even temporarily, it stays and you can still find it later. So that's the kind of evidence that it was used.
So this report is going to be based on the prior sampling?
The GAO report doesn't, it talks about sampling, but it doesn't have any of the data in it. GAO report's just records and, you know, information, interviews, records review. It's not conclusive at all. And I've read a copy, so I know.
And you were saying that finding these constituents doesn't necessarily mean that there was Agent Orange there. What else could possibly have been, could cause those findings?
Well, I've seen 2,4-D alone, and I've seen both 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T in the environment years and years later, right? I've seen it at the Agent Orange sites and at other sites like this where we don't expect to see Agent Orange. So those chemicals were often used alone. 2,4-5-T, if we find that, that could mean that fenoprop alone was used in the 60s because it was banned in the 70s. So maybe early, right after 70, maybe for 5 or 10 years it was used, even though it was banned, that's possible. So that's possible. It's also likely that 2,4-D, you probably have 2,4-D somewhere in your garage. Have had it.
You were saying that's Roundup?
Yeah, and some old formulations of Roundup. It's very possible you see 2,4-D. And the Navy doesn't even want to tell us they use 2,4-D, which is very odd because everybody uses 2,4-D or has used it. So that makes no sense to me at all. They said they have no records and the typhoon made our homework and stuff. So I don't guys, it's crazy. And then the idea that they wouldn't explain that they've used these, even legally used 2,4-5-T, that doesn't make sense to me either. So there are some records out there. I think we can get to shed some more light on it.
So not only did they say they did not use that, they said Agent Orange never came along. So this is all a tiered approach to continue the investigation. If we come up with hits of the constituents we're sampling for, as well as quite possibly any signs of former fuel leaks that may still exist. And I don't know why the Navy denied us access. Maybe it's because they were worried what we might find. I don't know.
So if we find a 2,4-5-T alone, or we find both, it's not proof, but it's reason to further investigate, which the Navy agreed to in their sample plan, which is why they're going back. So that would be sort of the thing to look out for in the news, is if you see both, if you see 2,4-D, that's great information, because we know that people use Roundup and other herbicides, and we, I mean, it might mean there's a danger, but you know, we can investigate that in a separate way. This would be, if you find 2,4-D alone or 2,4-5-T in combination with 2,4-D, that's more interesting. That's a, you know, we should do more work, more homework, maybe dioxin sampling to get a sense of, you know.
Did Mr. Moyer have any information on what he was applying on the, you know, the pesticide or what material he was laying down?
We didn't read all his documents, but he didn't know. He was just a Marine at the time, and they said, grab this pack, go here and spray. Mm-hmm. And he just knows that it smelled funny, everything that he sprayed died, and all that stuff.
Yeah, so I don't really know what he, you know, he and the other guy, Foster, I'm not sure they really knew what the constituents were that they were spraying, but they did pick the places that that Guam EPA guys had identified, Michael, and Michelle, Jesse, and Walter. Mm-hmm. And so that was cool. So those places lined up real well. And then the speaker found this woman's name from our interview, and Michelle researched her, found her, and got the information. We went there. So that worked out great. So we got a lot of locations. I think we're going to have a pretty good database. I'm going to prepare like an analysis of all this information, and I'll give it to you guys, and you can do with it whatever you want. Just a note, this is getting a lot of support from EPA. Our regional administrator is really supportive. I would say our administrator's office is supportive because they met Walter so early on in their term. I don't know about Mr. Wheeler, but I can imagine he's going to be supportive of the work. I've gotten no pushback. My office, they said, my direct Superfund division director, he said, well, we want, the Navy should really be doing this, but since they're not, you do it, share the plan, but don't ask him for any comment. So that was the direction I got. So I did share the plan, and they, you know, they have comments, I guess, but whatever. I've been told don't listen to their comments. So that's fine. I think that the tide might turn, that our people might put a little more pressure on them if that's the way you wanted to go, and then the further work would be done by them, maybe with somebody like me giving oversight advice.
So again, what this allows us is, gives us a line of evidence that if we see constituents, and again, not just the two constituents that could be part of the Agent Orange scenario, but anything else from maybe past spills or things, give us the ability to go and knock on the Navy's door and say, we found this, we need to talk about it and investigate further. And that's kind of what we were hoping to accomplish on this sampling event. This is by no means the end all. If anything, it's just the start.
Were you going to check over in the Lamfit River area where some of it may have been disposed of in the Ordot dump and may have evidence, you know, going...
Maybe disposal in the dump?
Yeah.
No, we haven't thought to look there. I don't know if I can work in the dump.
No. What he's talking about is a river. There was a, there's a dump, and then it... kind of
like along the shoreline of the river.
Yeah, and it's unlined dump, so stuff leached out of it, and so maybe.
So some of the problems with maybe sampling into the dump is because they closed it, and they've got systems in place, so like the leachate goes through their leachate system that gets collected and funneled towards GWA. So, I mean, we may be able to sample things like that, but it wouldn't be going out and grabbing soil samples. It would be looking at the leachate and possibly maybe some of the groundwater monitoring wells, or actually not even really that anymore at this point. But yeah, so it would be something slightly different than what we're doing now.
Yeah. You know, Moyer and Wells brought up the idea of sampling sediments and surface waters and things, and in my experience, we haven't seen much in water, certainly. This is an oily substance. It behaves like grease, so it's going to stick to particles and stuff like that.
Will it sheen on top of the water?
If it was in high concentration, for sure.
it flowed to make a rainbow sheet.
Yeah, that's back behind there. I mean, I don't know if that's natural or what.
Well, that could be any oil or a natural oil, too. Right. That's possible.
And then down the road a little bit more towards Polaris Point, there's what people used to call the drum lot. Have you been?
Yes.
You pile of drums there at one time?
Buried drums in the site that we're currently again addressing it right now, but we have not sampled for.
Well, it's easy to run these analyses there
right.
in the future, so we're doing an analysis project there.
And what kind of concentrations are now? Is this for nowadays we're looking at this, or for the guys that applied it? Yeah. I mean, if someone went and took up backfill and put it around their house or for a foundation, would
yeah.
that cause a problem?
Well, from the what I've seen, at least on everywhere other than Vietnam, that's what I've seen, you know, very trace concentrations, really low levels. So, you know, living in a situation like this would not trigger an EPA risk assessment, right? But it might trigger dioxin sampling, and then dioxin might be high. So it's hard to say, but I'd say generally no.
What yeah. is that dioxin? Then what would be the concern? I think you said the.
That's the thing that's the most carcinogenic.
RV. I know, yeah. but the house that you're talking about, the cancers that are.
Yeah, that's what they said. Yeah, they said they feel like they've been exposed to these industrial pollutants, especially herbicides. So, in other words, if I got 2,4-5-T at this house, or I got both, I would go back and do a dioxin survey. Just to give you a sense. I'm doing that in another case where I've got, you know, 150 residences where everybody has a drum, and we don't know these drums appear to have or had herbicides in them. You know, and so we're going to sample all the yards, and then a subsample will be done for dioxin. So I'm going to know a lot more about this in general in like maybe 6 months. Because I've got this whole separate analysis going to be 200 samples there. And that is at the stage after this stage. So if any of these had 2,4-5-T in them, we want to look further, or both can have contaminants.
Again, it's a tiered approach.
Yeah.
If we get positive hits on any of the constituents that we're sampling for, it leads us, gives us justification to continue the investigation in that area, either for Agent Orange or for other herbicides or even fuel spills.
Yeah, back to that Area 1, is it? Area 1 up at the Anderson. Their sample showed nothing. Our sample showed both 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T in one of the areas. So if that happened in one of these places, I would want to go there and do more work. That's kind of the decision rule I'm using. And the other ones, I'd say, you know what, it's probably fine. Unless some new information came about. Somebody said, no, I swear there's a drum here or something like that. Yeah. And I could screen any site like this. This cost nothing. It was real easy. No problem to go and do another site somewhere, you know. So if it made sense, we would go and do that as well. You know, we could do that in addition at another site. I think this herbicides method gets forgotten. And the other thing is people get herbicides and pesticides confused, so bug killers versus weed killers. So often I've seen people do herbicide investigations where they analyze for pesticides. They're totally unrelated. So you get funny results, and you say there's nothing there, and you look for the wrong thing. So that happens a lot at this kind of work. But there's no reason why you couldn't run this analysis on the other site. You couldn't run it at Datado or whatever, just to get a sort of a sense if these things were there. Yeah.
And I really want to stress... the gratefulness that I have with Harry doing this as an on-scene coordinator, and he used to run the whole shebang of on-scene coordinators for Region 9. They're basically the SWAT emergency response team for US EPA. So if you just think back to the last couple of years, you've seen the Hawaii volcano, the California fires both last year and this year, the hurricane that went through Florida, all of these things these guys are getting deployed for. We
have team's on Saipan right now.
Right now he's got team members on Saipan. And we still were able to get him to come out during this week to do it. So, yes.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of great gratefulness and appreciation there.
No, it's been great working with you. I was really blown away by the level of knowledge the Guam EPA team had for this, because, you know, I don't know anything about Guam or where the pipeline is, but everybody contributed, and we were able to get really excellent locations. They happen to line up exactly with Mr. Moore's complaints, so that's going to be, I think, a success story. I think it's been a really excellent effort. The fact that the Navy gates were locked doesn't mean, to me, it doesn't mean anything except for they're just uncooperative, you know, for unnecessarily uncooperative, because this is not, you know, a major deal in our estimation in terms of, you know, some kind of funny thing that's going to be found. So.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Has this entered our food chain, by the way? I mean, I read about oatmeal being and wheat having herbicides in it. Mm-hmm.
You know what? I don't know. That's a really good question.
I mean, well, where do you stand? Like, in general, like,
where do I stand on that? You know what? I don't really know. It's a really good question. I think, you know, all the literature and everything that's out there about it, it's mainly been done by, like, FDA or USDA types. So they say, okay, we can spray it, kills the plant, it degrades rapidly in sunlight, it's gone, it's not in the food. That's the party line. Mm-hmm. I see this stuff in soil all the time. You know, I don't know what the uptake rate of it in plants is. I know it does degrade, bacteria can degrade it if you land farm it. You can get rapid degradation. We tried that in Vietnam, worked great. I don't know about dioxins either, whether they go into the food in this way or not. I think there's other things that are more likely, like, you know, to have contaminants.
Sabrina's conchita.
Something else
is going to
kill me beforehand. So
yeah, maybe. But still, if you're exposed to the stuff like in your yard and you're going in and out every day, you're getting exposed to trace levels or high levels of what was originally spread. I think that's the reason there's significant toxicity in people that got exposed or animals that got exposed. That included birth defects in animals, birth defects in humans, so these related to dioxin. So that's why it's such a scary thing for people.
Hey, thanks, Harry.
Yeah.
So, Katrina had to step out, right? Step away, go.
She's gone.
Okay, so actually, that kind of was one of the things that I was talking to her about. She wanted to do a full-blown discussion on what her contractor is doing, which includes the PIEC, and I kind of was playing it by ear, but it works out that she had to go pick up her kids or do what she needed to do. One of the reasons I didn't want to do the full-blown PIEC presentation that Conchita had part of her overall presentation was I wanted to ensure that the Pacific Island office, Carl and John and Carol, had a chance to review what we're doing. She's going to give us the presentation tomorrow in a division head meeting, and so we haven't even officially seen it at this point. So I was going to let her do it, but since it didn't, it kind of fits better with what I was hoping for, that at least we could look at it internally before we present it to you guys. So it's, I apologize that you don't get to see the 32 slides today, but definitely by December we will have the full-blown presentation, and we'll put Conchita up front so that, because we missed her this month. Okay?
Okay. So go on to some of the other new business. Okay, we got bill number 292-34. That's the one that has us videotaping the meetings and also being able to call into the meetings with a
video conference.
So can you tell us a little bit about that?
I think with streaming the board meetings online, that's an option. It doesn't sound like a requirement, but it does give us the option or the ability to do that. I think the more important part of that bill is trying to meet quorum. So, for example, if one of the board members is unable to be physically present at the board meeting, they now have the ability to teleconference in and participate in the board meeting in that manner. So,
do we need to have any equipment to allow that on our end? Because we're not just going to have them on a...
Right, and I thought about it. I understand the spirit of the law, or the bill, where we're trying to save quorum. But I think if a board member, and I'm not trying to speak for any of you, but if you're unable to physically be here, you're probably also going to be unable to tether yourself to a telecommunication device to partake in the meeting. So. I'd imagine we'd probably take a look at some of the mainstream apps, Skype, those types of things. I think we should probably have everything here that we could accommodate the meeting, the participants with. But I think that the end user or the board member who won't be present,
It sounded like he would have to have rules in place first to.
All right, the board would have to come up with the policy on...
Hold on one second. Sabrina? Sorry. Could I get a copy of that letter you referenced earlier? I haven't seen it yet.
Sure.
Okay, thanks. I just haven't seen
one?
It.
No,
you
haven't.
Again, it just came right before the meeting, actually.
Okay.
So
I just haven't had a chance to see it. I saw you taking off. I wanted to make sure I...
There you go.
Thank you very much. It sounded from that, and it's you referred to the bill to whatever, but it's actually public law 34-133.
So it's now it's passed.
Yeah, the one about the
video conference.
The video conference.
Okay.
So she's saying that we need to have rules and processes within the bylaws. So can we?
That's going to be your guys' decision how.
Can we develop them? I mean, it sounds to me like it's just a way, like if Terry's off island and he wants to join in and we need him for. So he can Skype, he can face,
And I think it's that simple. The rules is what you guys are going to allow. Again, what we discussed is...
Let Kristen draft something up for us.
I like that. But yeah, it's just one of those things. Is a phone call, is that official enough? Or do you need to see them?
No, I
think it was video.
It's video. Yeah, it's got to be video. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I don't have the law in front of me, I think it said something about like you would just have to make a request ahead of time, and then you would do whatever your rules say.
Okay.
So if it was,
Okay. You can tell us next meeting.
Sure.
All
right.
Okay, you want to discuss Bill 350 a little bit?
I can't participate because my partner. That's what I'm told, and I can't, so I have to recuse.
Okay.
So I think I'll just go.
Oh, okay. Okay, we're still okay.
All right.
Okay. So the way I understand it, the crux of Bill 350.
You're not going anywhere without these, Bob.
I had to get one of these, too.
Yeah, grab
it. It's just a reason to come back around here.
Yeah, the crux of Bill 350 is that the legislature wants to appropriate $600,000 a year from the revolving recycling fund for 10 years to pay an obligation to Mr. Benny Bellows, who did some work for land management and the Tomorrowland Trust. I guess the original contract that was written was that he would process scrap metal as an offset against his rent on the Tomorrowland Trust property. But I believe that the amount of metal that he processed was way in excess of what they anticipated, and so it would take 200 years of rent offset for him to get paid. So the government is, or the senators are saying this is the only way he can get paid, is if they find a funding source, and they've identified the revolving recycling fund as a funding source. So I guess we were just looking at weighing in on it and seeing what the thoughts of the board is regarding that situation. You know, our
didn't he, wasn't the original contract only for 25,000 metric tons?
I believe that's what he's billing for, is
25,000. No, it's extra. Who told him? I mean, I'm just wondering if he, out of the goodness of his heart, he just said, I'll clean up everything, and now he's trying to bill for that.
I think they're saying that he picked up a minimum of 25,000 metric tons. He picked up probably more, I think, is what they're saying.
Yeah,
but that
50,000.
Yeah, more. But he's kind of billing them for 25,000 metric tons.
Because I think the original agreed upon was 25,000. So I'm just wondering who gave him the okay to keep going and doing more, and why he would expect to be paid then.
Right.
I couldn't count. As far as quality PA, this was an agreement that was made with the Industrial Land Commission.
So we don't have anything to do with that part of it.
Yeah. This is an agreement that Department of Land Management and being the oversight of Industrial Land Commission board, or the board being part of the Department of Land Management, this is an agreement that they put together. The specifics, we don't really have a lot. Again, what was described earlier about the RRF is we're the administrator of, at this point, we are the administrator of that fund. We're putting together the rules and regs. Quite honestly, as you know, rules and regs, senators can put in their riders and trump what we submitted to them. That's where we're at right now.
So, when did the RRF come into existence?
About 2003, 2004.
Yeah. Correct.
It was before this.
So this was after, this was
9 or 10.
9?
Yeah, but don't know when it came to Guam.
No, when it came to
Guam. Oh, okay. Yeah,
when it was,
before that.
I believe it was 2003, if I'm not mistaken.
Is where the first
This activity occurred in 2001.
The
RRF was established after this contract.
And it's not, so, okay, for something that happened before the RRF was
in existence.
Created.
Right.
And so, it wasn't supposed to be used. I mean, I remember when it was sold to the public, why it was supposed to be used for the junk cars.
And that's kind of what they're saying, that's why this fund should pay for it, because he's saying he's removed junk cars and metallic debris.
But
that's the reasoning.
Okay. Well, I mean, we don't have really a lot of say in. We can, if
in the end, no. They're just looking. Some people have asked what the board's position would be on this, because they're going to take $600,000 a year,
be against
a year for 10 years. Yeah.
Well, it says that EPA confirms that $590,000 can be allocated annually. How was that determined? Meet the remaining 5.9 million.
See, and that's where we've had discussions. They've indicated that we've stated such things,
uh-huh.
And we really have not.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah. And so we, unfortunately, I wasn't there last week when they had the public hearing, but we need to rectify that, because we've never said that there's this much money that that can be used. We'll look into it. I don't think we've done any analysis on in that regard. But if that's what we need to do, we could do that. But yeah, to actually say that we said that.
Yeah, so we need to find where someone said that.
Mm-hmm.
because that kind of verbally then we'd be held to have to do it. So we find where that is.
So they're just looking for a funding source.
For money, I understand.
Yeah, they're saying they have zero other places to get the money, and that Department of Land Management and Ancestral Lands, that they agree that this is a obligation of the government, and now they're trying to find money. And I say this is the only place that there's money that we can get. And so it's just up to us to
Bank of Guam is money. They can go take it from the Bank of Guam or Bank of Hawaii or any other place.
Yeah, I'm just telling you all the facts and the testimony.
You know why I robbed the bank? Because that's where the money is, right? It's a contract action.
Can I just comment? Because the source of the funds, I guess, is a separate issue from what this bill does. This bill tries to, you know, and that's what the AG's testimony was about, was about how what they're trying to do is dictate the term. Like, they're trying to go into this contract that was apparently entered into, you know, back in 2003 or something like that, and amend it through this legislation. And so the AG's testimony was like, well, wait a minute, this isn't the way to do that. So that's a completely separate conversation of how to, you know, of what they're trying to do with this bill. Compared to what funding source should be used to pay.
Right, that's the only reason that we're involved, is because they're saying we want to take $590,000 a year for 10 years, you know, and the legislature can do whatever they want. If they choose to do that, we have no say in the matter. But it's just, you know, do we want to go on record, you know, that this is fine with us or this is not fine with us, or what's our position? Not that it really makes that much difference. Or do we have enough information to really come up with a position on it?
Well, from my understanding, you're also responsible for the Dededo transfer station, right?
That was
according to the district court.
Right, the
court. Just don't see how
how
there's enough money to do any all that.
How much would the five, and I'm just going to impact, but how much would it impact
how much
the activities for the year, the 590,000?
So as of now, because the draft regulations are in draft, we've not spent any of that money except for the contract to manage the zero waste program and the public outreach and the position that's being held for our recycling individual. That's the only money that in the statute by law is what we're allowed to spend. We cannot touch the money until the rules and regulations are adopted. Mm-hmm. And that's where we were saying that now that we got this letter from BSP, we can go through the public comment period and then present it to you guys so that we can adopt those rules and regulations. And when those rules and regulations are adopted, if it goes through with nobody adding anything to it, then those are the only ways to spend the money. And so that's where this bill could force us to add that to our rules or regs, or it's just going to be law that we just have to understand that all the possible methods to spending the money, which Conchita was listing, you know, like for the mayor's office, for incentives, for the typhoon debris facilities, all of those things would take a hit, basically, because you would already have, if this bill gets passed, you already have that much money dedicated out of the annual funding. And so it would just reduce the amount of money that we can give to the projects we want to see done for the year.
So are who we should be talking to then are going to be the senators before, or anyone in particular?
Yeah, I guess that's...
Because the way I see it is this guy just went and did more work thinking he's going to get paid for it, no matter what. Easy. And the Chamorro Land Trust is supposed to be on the hook for it, but then somebody at EPA supposedly said, we pay for it, so now the senators are holding...
Well, they're saying the EPA says that we can pay for it, but...
After the fact that EPA said they could, or that they're claiming that EPA said that we could absorb the
$590,000.
I mean,
so it wasn't something that we...
Yeah, but I don't think there would be a number by that time whenever they decided what...
Yeah, so, I mean, technically, it could be absorbed.
I mean,
if but, I mean, you can't. There's no ands or buts about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, okay.
If
yeah,
we were forced, if we were forced to absorb it, we would have to make it do it. We would have to do it that way. Again, it would be by law. If and then by law, we would have to do it that way. But again, it would diminish some of the actual projects that we had identified, and which is what we're hoping to get passed by our rules and regs on it. So.
Can I ask?
Sure.
Is the money current? Are you receiving RRF funds?
Yes. Yes.
Currently.
Yes.
I mean,
and as Kristen was saying, that it may all be a moot point anyway, because the AG testified that it's inorganic, because the legislature is directing the executive how to construct the contract and dictate all the terms of the contract. And then the second point, that the current legislature can't bind the following legislature to those payments beyond the end of this legislature. So you can't bind future legislatures by actions of the current legislature. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the AG's opinion, that it's inorganic and it's it wouldn't be enforceable upon the following legislature, that they would have to continue that payment. That was the AG's testimony.
I mean, I think it's premature. I mean, I think for those reasons, we'll see what the AG says. I mean, if it's an inorganic law, then it's a moot point for us to decide this year.
Because they were wanting to have a roundtable discussion with all the people involved, the AG, the senators that proposed the bill, and probably us, I would imagine, to kind of iron out the inorganic and the portions of the bill that won't pass muster. So, but they want to get this done before the end of this legislative session, because you start over from square one once the new legislature comes in.
What's the public hearing for this?
Already.
It was done last week.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they still have to iron out the issues, the inorganic issues, and the issue of tying the hands of a future legislature. Which is why the GRRP contract fell.
And again, when you see the RRF regs, which we've provided to you guys in the past, this is not money that's coming to Guam EPA to use as organizational income. It's for everything else outside. So we are literally just the administrators of the fund at this point. And we can't use the money for enhancement or employees and outside of what already is written by law, by statute. So, again, it won't impact our operations per se. If this law does come to pass, it'll impact our ability to do some of the projects for the island of Guam versus directly helping Guam EPA.
So I guess we could leave it to the AG to figure it all out if it's legal. And in the meantime, we could discuss things with senators to let them know our opinions individually. In fact, I testified today at my confirmation hearing, and they asked me my feelings on it. And I just said, well, if you own the money, you should pay them one way or the other. But we have uses for that money within Guam EPA. We have the different components of the revolving recycling fund that we're going to be needing to do and needing to pay for. So,
well, I don't know if the agency should comment on how the legislature chooses to handle a problem outside of the agency, but I think the agency should participate and say, if this happens, how is it going to affect your mission and your operations? But I don't think it's incumbent on the agency to comment on how the legislature should run their business,
right. Deciding
a contract matter that had nothing to do with the agency.
So maybe that's something that you can do now, is just to impress upon them the effect it would have on our plans for the Revolving Recycling Fund and the programs that we're looking to implement.
Give me a minute.
So maybe you could just do that.
Okay.
Just have a seat at the table and let them know that if you do take this, that there will be impacts to our plans for the for that right. fund.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
How? Well, you don't run the government.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. So.
And that's just exactly what I said. Is you know, when the rules and regs get up to the legislature, I've seen funnier things happen that writers that really don't have anything to do with what's going on. So, I you're right. I don't have control over the legislature. I can just tell them what will be impacted.
Isn't the impact on the agency? We have to stop this, and this.
Mm-hmm. So maybe that's a good way to handle it. Just have Walt make sure he lets them know the implications
right.
of taking that money.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll decide it's their money, not ours. You know, it's legislature appropriates it.
Canada didn't lean on Big Brother because this is a local money funding source, so I can't force him to tell me to go which way, one way or the other, but yeah. I'm just joking, Carl. But yeah, that's where I guess.
Okay, so let's just kind of monitor the situation, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll all be called and summoned if they want to
talk to our senators about how we each feel about the situation, I guess, and at Walt's people for the agency and the ramifications.
If I could be of any more help, please let me know, but I got a hard stop here for another conference call.
Okay.
Okay, well, I think we're probably done. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
Did we discuss this Jacobs Curry project?
That was Conchita's.
Right.
Oh, that's her
that
part.
That was,
okay.
Yes, that was her presentation.
Okay.
We'll do that next month. Sorry.
No.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
So before you leave, we are doing a team building on Wednesday. We're going to clean up the trash around Teason, walk around the streets, pick up the trash, and then have a Thanksgiving lunch. If you guys want to. Join us for that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, especially since you're taking off. I know.
Well, we, okay.
Yeah.
No, he can't take off unless we move to. Okay.
Yes.
So just.
Terry got to leave.
Come on. Well.
is there anything else anybody else wants to talk about?
Yeah.
You guys have anything out there in the?
No. Yes. Congratulations on your. Hopefully, you get reappointed. You know,
Yeah.
Sorry,
we
couldn't make it this morning.
Oh, yeah.
Doing work.
That was a good turnout. I really appreciated everybody.
Yeah.
Carl came.
Yeah.
Bert and everybody.
Okay.
I moved
to adjourn.
And then you're going to set up the
meeting. Yeah.
I second.
Okay.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Just pick the meeting.
So we'll pick the meeting date. Do we want to do it while?
Talk to Carl about it.
Well, let's just set it tentatively for the 20th and then move it up if we need to. So we'll set it for the third Thursday again, which is the 20th. But it's subject to change because the regional administrator from Region 9 will be here the second week of December.
This is exactly what you need.
It's preliminary talking.
So this is
the part that
he
does.
He does. He absolutely does. Carl is setting it up with Walt.
I'm glad to hear that, Kristen.
Yeah, subject to change.
I haven't had to say that.
No,
I will be attending for the board meeting.
When do you leave?
Tomorrow today was
my last
one.
I
want to grab one
of
you.
I will let him know.
Yes, let him know.
Right
now.
This is your last meeting? Oh, I forgot. Hey, thanks for your coordination. She's sure.
actually won't be. Well,
oh, okay. Yeah, no problem. No.
Start next year.